welcome to season 4, episode 21 of LOI Weekly. They came, they arrived, they won 2-0. Shamrock Rovers were beaten 2-0 by AC Milan. The dream was dead, but those of us who were there, and three of us in this podcast were there, bore witness to greatness, really, in Tala on a strange but somewhat memorable night. That person is Graeme Gartland, who joins us, had an illustrious League of Ireland career, is going to chat about what he's up to now. Involving Shamrock Rovers, no less. And Graeme Cummins is in as well. Graeme, of course, had a very, very long career in football, both across the water and in the League of Ireland, up until very recently playing in the League of Ireland. And like an absolute idiot, is now pursuing a career in journalism, which by the end of this show, he probably will have abandoned, I would argue, Daniel MacDonald. But anyway, what do you think, Dan?
Is nothing worse than journalists going on about how it's a terrible industry to get into, John. You're just trying to be protectionist there, just so no one can get into it. It's an absolute scare. That's just a product of your own insecurities saying that. Like, you're going to tell kids just not to go into that industry because basically you just can't, you can't stand the competition. So don't mind that. His columns have been good. He's done some podcasts and stuff himself. So like, he doesn't need any advice from us, to be fair.
And thanks to our new sponsors, Lottoland, where you'll find all the odds and special bets for the rest of the SSE Electricity League Premier Division. Check out lottoland.ie/sportsbook. And make sure to stay tuned as we'll be giving out some of its LOI specials during the show. And you'll find us on Podcast Republic, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and LOI Weekly on Twitter in association with Airsport and Independent.ie. We've lots to talk about. We still have a League of Ireland team, obviously, in Europe. Dundalk are off to a place, I think, Dan, before we get to the lads. This is a place both of us would just love to be in. This obscure pro-Russian kind of enclave on the edge of Moldova playing against Sheriff tomorrow night.
Transnistria, yeah. I actually should have gone. So when Ireland played Moldova 4 years ago, I was at the game and there was a couple of the lads did a day trip on the day of the game, which involved getting up pretty early and going to do it. And I just didn't do it. And I sort of regret it a bit now. I think they had to like bribe their way across the border and they met obstacles at every pass because it's basically Transnistria considers itself a sort of a different state, you know, to Moldova. It's a breakaway region. I saw some reference last week to someone saying, yeah, it's got like was it Jerry Malone or someone talking about the region, like it's known for a lot of like cigarette smuggling and other stuff coming across the border. And I was like, that's enough about Dundalk. What about Tiraspol? But like the point about it is that actually for the players that are going and the staff that are going, and I mean, the lads are there with us, like they know with some of these trips, like, you know, part of it is maybe you might get to walk around on the day of the game or go for a little bit of a walk or, you know, sometimes, you know, stay even after or whatever. They can't do that now. It's all very bubble. They're basically in their hotel. They can't leave it. They can't even leave it to go for a walk or a coffee or anything like that. So they can look out the window at it, but they're not necessarily sort of experiencing the place. So it's a football trip in every sense of the word. But listen, they've got, I guess, a bit of a chance, I think, by all accounts, that they've, from speaking to people are involved, that they've done their homework on Sheriff and they believe that they're not dissimilar to Selye, who they played in the first round, the team that you think every team in the League of Ireland would have beaten wrongly. But the point about them is that they're not exactly like a possession team. They're more like they beat a team from Luxembourg in the first round, Fola Esch, and they had less than 50% possession. But of course, there's a whole debate now about how relevant is possession unless it's good possession. Well, and they're actually a very effective attacking team. But the Dundalk will have the ball for spells. There's no doubt. And from listening to, you know, their homework, they're more conscious that they've a strong front three. They've actually lost a key striker who's gone, and their left back is apparently their second best attacking threat. And so, but Dundalk will have a chance to like have the ball and see what they can do. So, I don't know. It's an interesting one. Like, I mean, we've got two Grahams on the line, but
this has to bring us straight to Kiev because, you know, when you think of Gartland, you think of Kiev and what might have been for Drogheda just over the border in Ukraine. And that must be one of your memories, Garts, of like that proper spell you had at Drogheda and one of the closest run things ever for an Irish club in Europe.
Yeah, it was what a spectacle. Like over there, it was, I don't know if you were over there, Dan, but
I was. It was one of the most incredible games I was at. Yeah.
And especially the last 10 minutes of the game, it was almost surreal. It was strange. It was the whole atmosphere in the ground changed. They were all standing up. It felt like the ground got closer in on you. We managed to score to make it 2-2. I think they were looking for a free, but for my goal, they were looking sort of for a free out. They never got it. And then as soon as that went in, it was like the atmosphere just changed in the stadium where there was a bit of a uh-oh. And then we just went up a gear and they started to fold and they were looking around at each other in the bench. Like, yeah, we just got louder in terms of as a group, but we got better. Our intensity went up. And then I think Adam Hughes had a chance where the keeper dropped somewhere he probably should score from about, I think it was 8 yards out, maybe. Was it, Dan? 8 yards out. And then Shane breaks down the right and he fires one across and it hits the post. And if it hits the post a different way, it probably falls to Ollie Cattle. And I just remembered, like, every one of us just dropping to our knees, but also they dropped to their knees as well, as if we've got away with this, like, you know. And we got clapped off and stuff. Do you remember that, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, do you remember they had, was it Malevsky, their star player? It was the number, like, he was the star. He was the Ukrainian international. He was star players. Yeah, and he
was brilliant. Yeah.
So they took him off with around 15 to go. And I remember the fans in front of us, where they were in part, not party mode, but they were like game over mode. And they were all sort of very jovial and stuff. And then you scored.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden...
He was giving it that.
Yeah, and everyone was done. Yeah. And then you scored. And all of a sudden, I remember at the full-time whistle, I'm not even sure what the Ukrainian religion situation is, but at the full-time whistle, they'd gone from almost were home and hosed and not even watching the game sort of relaxation to, after those misses, like, blessing themselves at full-time and going, how did they escape that? Because they went on to do really well. They went on to do well in the Europa League that year.
I think the next
Spartak Moscow was the next round. Yeah.
Yeah. Whoever got through got Spartak Moscow, which we were thinking that's another big one. Obviously, Kiev, you consider, would be bigger than Spartak Moscow. But I think they took 8 of Spartak Moscow over the 2 legs.
We
gave them a fright. But yeah, it was surreal. And in fairness to the players themselves, like, they were very good after the game. They were, like, you know, shaking their hands and well done. And, like, you know, we got away with this. And, you know, all the best and yous are good. And we underestimated just that type of scenario. The manager was similar as well. But I just remembered we went down and the Drogheda fans were in the far corner. But as we were walking down to them, like, whatever Kiev fans said, he just clapped us all off. And then it was a bit like fair play. It was like, you know, fair play is like you gave as good as you got here. But that's like for us in Europe, it was always about, like, you know, yeah, we're going to play. We're physically able to match us, which is Paul's biggest thing. Like, how can we physically match these teams? So he built us up over the first couple of seasons to physically match them. And then it wasn't about playing their game, like, in terms of, right, let's keep the ball and be slick. Yeah, you got to keep the ball and move the ball, but it was sort of about being aggressive when you had the ball. Like, you know, don't be afraid to play with heart and a bit of, not necessarily, we didn't go long. We weren't a direct team. We played through, but it was like, you know, let's get up and get at teams and play at a really high tempo all the time. You know what I mean? So, and that's where Paul was good in Europe. He was very good at going, yeah, we're good at this in terms of, you know, we're aggressive, we're strong, but let's play up gears. They won't play at that all the time. They don't play at this pace. Like, I think we got Scandinavian teams, OK Start, we got HJK, and the HJK game at home, we just blitzed them. Like, we scored 3. We went 1-0 up. And after that, we just blitzed them. And it was like,
so Paul Doolan saw this, he almost saw a deficiency in terms of these exalted opponents you were taking on in terms of sort of intensity that you would have had on the ball. He said, you could be better than them.
Yeah, in that sense, he said, like, these, like the Finnish teams and the European teams, they can take breaks sometimes in possession where they'll keep the ball for 5 minutes. And it's like, that's when they have their sort of relaxing period. And he was saying, Jordan, that time, we're not going to rest. Like, you know, we don't let them rest. Don't let them get their rest on the ball. Like, so he says, make the game a high tempo game, because we play high tempo football every Friday night. At that stage, like, you could have went to a Shells game, a Bowes game, a Pats game, Derry, Cork. All the games are flat out, you know. So he says, these can't play flat out the way yous can. So we're going to go and blitz them. And yet, by the way, we had quality as well. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't, I don't mean to sound that we played just up and at them football, but it was, there was an intensity to our games that, like, you know, whenever you can get at them, get at them. Don't let them rest. Keep the we'd have a multi-ball system at Daily Mount. We kept the tempo in the game. And the only time we probably didn't have legs to do that, we were away to Helsingborg, Larsen's team. And they just blitzed us. We didn't have the tempo in the team then, and they ran over us 3-0,
Great. So Graham Cummins, I mean, you had a couple of European experiences that I'm trying to think towards the tail end of your career, right? Since you came home, like, what was your European experience like?
With Cork, we played. We were unlucky, I think, at the start. We got Warsaw. At home, I thought we'd done all right against them. We lost 1-0. They got a great goal. Over there then, to be fair, Warsaw, the atmosphere was incredible. It was something, and they had, like, their ultra section was actually banned that night, the stadium, but the heat and everything. And we done, again, I thought we'd done all right. We lost the game 3-0, but we were kind of going for it when we were 1-0 down the way, half to kind of in Europe. And then we got a buy after that in the Europa League, and then got drawn against Rosenborg, so it was actually kind of a bad thing. And you could see the difference then, like, in terms of the quality of, like, the League of Ireland standard to, like, Rosenborg. I mean, we played them at home, and Turner's Cross is a lovely stadium, like, but I was thinking of, like, the away leg. I was injured, and I went up to, like, where their injured players sit, and you get offered, like, whatever you want, all your meals, you get a nice box and everything like that. And I'm thinking, like, Turner's Cross, you might get a cup of tea downstairs, and you sit in a cold stand, like, and you see the difference then. And then I was kind of thinking, like, this is where, like, fans sometimes don't realise even the smallest thing, like, just the gap in terms of budget. And, like, people criticise, I think, League of Ireland too easy in terms of defeats in Europe. You just expect, like, oh, because you can beat a team in Ireland, you should be able to beat Rosenborg or something like that. These players aren't good. Like, we were playing against, like, Nicholas Benton, and people were saying, oh, sure, like, he's not good. But then you go, yeah, he's not good, like, when he's playing in the Premier League in England. Like, if we were that good, we'd be in England, like, you know. So we didn't have a great time there. But, like, with Rovers last year, then we beat Bran, in fairness. But, like, some of the quality Rovers players have at the moment, like, I mean, Jack, remember Jack Bowen, them over that 2 legs was phenomenal, really, like, in the, like, you Dan Carr, and even, like, the quality we were bringing off the bench, like, Aaron Green came on in one of the games, he was outstanding, and they were very unlucky then. I missed the away game last year, they were very unlucky not to get through that. But I always think, looking at League of Ireland teams in Europe, people really do think we should be doing better than what we are. I think when you see the levels of the other sides, they're a lot better than you just might see their country and just think. I can remember with St. Johnson, we played a team from, I think it was Lithuania, and our manager at the start, Tommy, was just like, I don't know much about them, but they can't be that good, so just get after them.
That's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah,
I went to watch that. Was that the home game? He's played at home. Your man scored a cracker, didn't he? Put one in the top corner.
They were like 2-0 up after, 10 minutes?
This is kind of like two lads meeting in the pub. It's like, we actually have a shared history here. We met before.
Me and Brian go away. Brian will tell you the
story. Way back.
So tell me, lads. Yeah, let's get the full disclosure here of So Graham Cummins was on trial. Well, I mean, this isn't a courtroom. We can't go through the whole case. But I mean, what, it was a short term trial, or what was the situation here?
You came on trial at St. Johnson, didn't you, Graham?
Yeah, myself and Kenny Brown came over here.
Kenny Brown, right?
Yeah, and then.
So I played against you when you played for Cove. And you were only a kid, and I walked outside, and you said, "Do you get pizzas?" Remember?
Pizzas after the game.
You get pizzas. You get everything, and I said, "Here, like I said, here you can have that." And he was like, "Oh, thanks."
You actually gave him some of your pizza.
The best thing I got
whole pizza. Yeah.
Was this a draw? Was this a draw? You gave him his pizza.
We played them in the cup, I think, didn't we, Graham? We played us in the cup, and we walked out afterwards. And in fairness to Graham, Graham was one of those boys. He'd be honest, halfway through the game, he'd go, "Jesus, boy, we can't get a kick." All I'm doing is running, and I'd be going, "Jesus, you was a savage." That's all you'd hear. So after the game, was 19 or something, Graham.
It was the time called for independence.
After the game, was it?
Yeah, I think you beat us
about
5-0 or something.
Yeah.
So Drogheda were throwing out the pizzas at that stage. Only pizzas, everything.
So I walked out and I've gone, I've shook hands with Graham after the game. I spoke to him and I says, I walked out. He says, "Did you get pizzas?" And I says, "Here, you can have that." He says, "You sure?" I says, "Yeah, go for it." I says, "I don't eat much." And then he was like, "Right, then whatever." I think the manager, Derek McGuinness, pulled me in. He says, "I have two lads come." And I says, "Who are they?" And he says, "A lad named Graham Cummins." I says, "Oh, I played against him, played for Cove." And he says, "Yeah." And he says, "And I have another lad, Ken." I says, "Oh, I played against Kenny with Waterford." And I said, "Now this story goes arms and legs, because I was renting Noel Hunt's house. So I was renting Noel Hunt's house. Noel Hunt had about 4 bedrooms in this gaff. And I just said, "I'll put them up. I mean, I says, put them in with me. I'll drive them into training. They're in training every day. They'd be with me for a week, So the lads arrived in, him and Kenny, and ate me out of house and home. They did, poor Kenny.
Kenny
could eat, man.
Yeah.
I was like, "Jesus, where's he putting it?"
Talented man.
But he was, he done well. That's where, I always said to Dale, Derek McGuinness, I said, "Just take a chance on one of them." I was talking about Graham, because I think about 2 years later, Graham took off and started banging in goals and then gets a move. And I'm saying to Dale, "That's the fella you had on trial here 2.5 years ago, And he's like, "No way." And I says, "Yeah, that's him." And you forget,
I can remember actually.
He ends up signing.
I can remember going shopping and you were like, "What do you want for breakfast in the morning?" Me and Kenny, this is the difference between us and you. And we were like, "We might go for sugar puffs." And you were like, "The state of ye as professional football, sugar puffs."
Very, very underrated, to be fair.
Sugar puffs. I forgot all about that. Sugar puffs. You're getting Weetabix or porridge. I ain't getting sugar puffs.
Paul Doolan wouldn't like that.
Paul Doolan. Bob Dylan will tell you how to eat it.
Well, you both worked under Paul Doolan as well. I knew, Gareth, we knew you had a long sort of connection with Paul Doolan, obviously through Drogheda, but Graham Cummins also with the Ireland under-23s as well. You were saying,
yeah, we had him. I had him in Estonia with the Irish 23s, but I had him. I think the Irish 23s are playing in Waterford with England against England, and he tried to call me up for that as well, but I had college exams, so I couldn't miss him. I really liked him working with him. Paul, he was the exact same as Tommy Dunn. When I had Tommy at Cork, just a bit small, a bit more experienced, obviously, because he'd been the first team coach longer, but Paul was sound. We got to go over there, we got our night out and everything, and that's all you want, really, in the European trip. Not a lot of managers will let you out, he was one of those. He was be home at 12 o'clock. We strolled in at 4 and he didn't care, because we'd won the match. So I really liked him. I don't know, Gats, I thought he was brilliant.
That's a more relaxed version of Paul Doolan than I've heard, to be honest. Gareth
must have went soft on you as we were straight on the plane after your game. This is how would I sum him up? Intense. He was intense, he was intense in everything he'd done. And I don't think he'd apologise for that, and I don't think he's wrong in that. I think it's easy. I realise how hard it is to manage or coach a group when you actually got across the aisle, when you go and have to look after everybody. And I look back on even me as a player and think, I came across probably needy or a little bit wanted more praise, where I should have just got on with it sometimes, And you imagine there's 20 of them. You imagine 20 of that. Every player wants their ego stroked at certain times, but he was intense. He was very, very, he knew what he wanted and he made no bones about getting it. This is what you do and this is where I want you to do it. and there's no if, buts, or maybe, and there's no discussion, you know. I'd never ever criticize him because he probably got the best out of me. So it's hard to be critical of him in that sense. He drilled us to the point where we're airdropped the team, but that's by the mid, we 05, 06, 07. By the mid 06, like if we went 1-0 up in the game, it was over. You know what I mean? You could actually see we had a really good back four, but we were so well drilled from the top down. If you went 1-0 up, you could actually see this is going to be a great, you could see teams just looking as if this is going to be a gruel to try and break these down because we were so well drilled from that end of it. But he was, Paul would tell you how to do everything your whole day. You know, you should eat, you know, I want you to be like this. I want you to ride like this. I want you to leave like this. And when you're at home, I want you to be like this. And that's a very hard thing because very hard to manage when you're not at the club, you know. So I just thought in that sense, it was probably a point where he wanted control over things that probably are uncontrollable from a manager's point of view. So just things that you think that's a bit much like. But I loved playing for him. At times I did. At times it was fraught. I had very tough relationships with him. There's things that happened that I won't go into, but you know, there was, you know, stuff around probably the Ireland call up. There was other things that happened that I found very difficult to deal with, even when I was leaving. The stuff I said that I regret and I've apologized to him for. I say, listen, I was wrong. I'm sorry, but, and there's times where I wish I could have a better relationship with him, because obviously I've gone into management and coaching and he's somebody I probably would like to lean on, but it's never going to be the way it was, you know, and I understand that. But the 4 years I was at Drogheda, I think I had the most appearances during them 4 years, so he played me all the time. I can't ever fault him for that sense, do you know what I mean? There's times he didn't back me when I wish he did, but he'd still play me, you know what I mean? Like, I went a whole month without talking to him, and he played me, you know? But he just tell the assistant, tell Gertz. Tell Gertz we're doing this, and I go, all right.
That's interesting, you know, yeah. It's
a whole month not talking to your manager. Like,
yeah, so I'm just trying to...
But then, you'd repair it. I'd go and repair it with him and we'd work it out and then he'd be great and then he'd come and, you know, you'd have conversations with him. And it's a very hard thing for Paul to loosen his grip on what he feels is the way it should be. And I think that's probably might have what stopped him maybe getting more jobs in the future because what a talented coach.
That's it.
Great. So let's just go back to you two lads then. So Graham Cummins, then you end up in Scotland. Did you then encounter each other then, like when sort of you were with St Johnstone and Gareth at this stage, you're with Dundee? Would you have come across each other at all at that stage? Or?
I was coaching against them. Yeah,
his testimony. Remember Ando's testimony? We played against each other.
Cup tie, Dave McCoy.
Oh, it was a cup tie. Yeah, I told it was Ando's. Oh, it was cup tie. It was cup tie. Yeah.
I nearly got a milf out of that.
but lads, I suppose the fact that we have you both on and you've both sort of worked in the Scottish football environment compared to the environment here at home, Graham, you're only after retirement literally a couple of weeks ago, so you're very fresh in the game, but how did you even find coming home from Scotland to Ireland, having been away for those couple of years? And I don't know, you're probably seeing, you mentioned the facilities in Rosenborg, you're probably seeing a better, you know, better sort of standard and facility and so on. Like, how did you find it? And how did you find the contrast between the two?
In terms of football-wise?
Well, but both. Maybe football, but also maybe off the pitch as well. And the different, I mean, there's quirky aspects to the footballer's life in the League of Ireland, as we know, with finance and a lot of other things.
Well, I think, to be fair, in Scotland, I think Gareth will say this, there's certain clubs that have much better facilities than League of Ireland. But in terms of St. Johnstone, they weren't really any different to Cork City. To be fair, I would actually say Cork City have a better setup in terms of you go in your training, same training ground every day, where with St. Johnstone, we were travelling to two different locations all the time. Sometimes you mightn't even know where you're training the next day, where, like, I think when I met John, like, he came over, he actually flew over to Scotland to talk to me, and I obviously knew Cork, but he explained a lot more how more professional it is, and it wasn't actually a big change in terms of training-wise or facility-wise. I thought, like, Cork, I actually thought was better, because St. Johnstone, like I said, I just kind of bugged me, like, going from different location all the time to train and just leave your stuff in the one place. In terms of then, though, but the games are different, obviously. Like, I mean, playing at, I found, like, obviously you play at Celtic Park and Ibrox and things, and they're unbelievable. But, like, when you play the likes of, like, Ross County at home or something like that, League of Ireland atmospheres are much better. Like, I still think that, like, when Turner's Cross is full, it's incredible atmosphere. Like, the crowd was right on top, yeah. But again, it's only certain games in Scotland you think, like, these are really good games to play. And other than that, you kind of think to yourself, I can hear the man with a dog up in the stand, like, and it's dead. You're playing into empty ends. Like, so there's, like, I don't think there's a big difference in some of the games, like, and in the standard, there's not that big a difference. I think when you look at it, I think Scotland would try and sign a lot more lads, the lower teams, but realistically, lads don't want to go over there unless they're making a big difference in their life in terms of wages and things, which I don't think they are. Like, if you're playing for Dundalk or Shamrock Rovers at the moment, I wouldn't see any point in going over to Scotland when you're happy at home.
I was going to say, like, Michael O'Connor has gone today from Waterford to Ross County. He's gone to Ross County.
Your former club,
Michael O'Connor. Yeah. So, like, so
gone.
Yeah.
So told it was on Wikipedia.
So, how do you think he'll do? Like, you would have played with him, or you've been sort of around him, Graham. Like, in terms of levels wise, how do you think he'll find as a striker, like as a front man, as a sort of a physical number nine? How do you think he'll fare?
I think he'd do actually really well in the league. I think, like, Mick's problem sometimes is just getting his fitness, and I think he will concentrate a lot more when he goes over. I think he's an incredible lad, to be fair. He's brilliant in the dressing room. I thought when I spent a few weeks down at Waterford with him, I thought, like, what a guy to have in your dressing room and have in your team. And he actually loves soccer. Like, I know how proud he was to be Waterford captain. But again, you can't like begrudge a guy at the moment, because I think it's different now when you're playing with Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers to Waterford. Like, I mean, Waterford were all against going back playing in the league, so you don't know what will happen again in a few months' time down the line, what clubs are going to be happy to go back in the league if we stay in the current situation. So he's dead right now. I think he will do really, really well. Like, I mean, when I went up there, I started really well. I was a lot older than Michael, so he's got a lot of time to develop as well. And I think everyone can actually tell that there's a lot of potential in the kid. And he just, like I said, he'll go up there, and I think he's got his head right now, and that was probably a problem with him in the past, getting just his mental state right. But he's a very driven lad, and I think sometimes he gets a reputation that he doesn't deserve, really. Like, he's much better than when I didn't know him, I'd heard things about him, but he couldn't be further from that.
Yeah, it's funny, Alan Reynolds would have said that, like, how great he was around the dressing room. Like, just for you, Gart, obviously two Grahams there. Is there anything we can learn from Scotland from your experience there? You also played for Ross County.
Oh, yeah, I was on loan there for a month, actually, with Willie McStay.
Wow.
Very good. Yeah, Willie was brilliant. I think the thing with Scotland, and Graham will testify to this, Scotland is all about Scotland. You don't care about any other league other than their league. And it's an issue that something that I always touch on when I discuss between the two leagues. You know, we've played AC Milan, or Rovers have played AC Milan, and there's a big buzz around it, and I get a bit of press. But see, in Scotland, every day there's something, every day in the papers, you're 8 pages deep in 3 or 4 papers about Scottish football. Every day there's a discussion about the pros and cons. If I came on and I was negative about the league, you'd have people saying, well, Graham's negative about League of Ireland, or Gart's is negative about League of Ireland. But what they do is on radio shows on the BBC radio every night on Clyde FM, there's discussions about football. They're talking about it, positive and negatively, but it's out there all the time. So there's a massive discussion about it. So it becomes like more of a business. It's more business orientated than I think the League of Ireland here. So even though like people say, oh, you shouldn't criticise the league, I wouldn't agree with that necessarily. I think a healthy discussion around the league is better. I think once people are talking about it, like if Graham has an argument about the league and I come on and counteract that, but we're discussing it, people are talking about us discussing the league, and it just creates more link towards the league. And I just don't think we promote it enough. I don't think we're proud of it enough. I love it. It was brilliant. I love the league. It was brilliant for me.
Were you proud of it last season?
Yeah, it was. I thought it looked fantastic. Talla Stadium looked brilliant. If I hadn't come back and played for Longford, I don't know what I would have done. You know, I probably wouldn't have been in the game. So it saved me in that sense as well. It ignited a good friend of mine, Sean Dillon, as well. So you lose a lot of players without the league. And I think the bodies in the, and the, like, see the stuff you do that you say, right, we're just going to do a podcast. We're going to talk about it. It's great. Like, now I could be negative on the podcast and someone could be positive, but you're still creating. And I think Scotland do that a lot better than what we do. In terms of the football, obviously, you've probably six or seven teams that are really good. I agree with Graham. When I left Drogheda and went to train at St. Johnstone, I was like, it was a part of me thinking, oh, like, we didn't know where we were training. You pack up around. There was no gym. There was nothing. I went from a brilliant full-time setup at Drogheda to thinking, what's this like, you know? And I suffered. I really suffered in the first 3 or 4 months. I went backwards. I didn't play well. Didn't know whether I was going to stay on. So it was, yeah. And I agree. The 3 o'clock kickoffs over there, if it's a dull game, like Graham says, if it's St. Johnstone against St. Mirren or one of the games where it's, you know, there's not a great atmosphere, or the game might be great itself, the atmosphere would be low, where I think the Friday night games over here, if it's a really good game, the atmosphere is high. I think an evening game, you get more of an atmosphere at it. So I think they need to probably consider sort of maybe having more evening time kickoffs. They have a lot of half 12 kickoffs for Sky, and that like half 12 kickoff.
Dead atmosphere.
It was a dead atmosphere. Like, even we, by the way, like a lot of them would be like Rangers at half 11 or 12 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and you're thinking, geez, it's a great game, but the atmosphere isn't as good as it should be, you know. So I agree with Graham in that sense, but I do think they run it better as a business, and I do think it's promoted a lot better, like, you know.
Graham, like, you obviously have made the decision to retire, and I think, you know, you've spoken about it. I think, in, you know, I know you do columns with the Echo, and you've articulated your view that maybe, like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, you can tell us, but you were looking forward to retiring almost, as you weren't necessarily enjoying the last sort of spell of your career. Like, why was that, you know? And is part of that, I know you were obviously that Waterford experience about whether they were going to come back or not, and I think around that time you were sort of vocal enough that you were worried about, you know, football in this country as a job for the rest of the year. I mean, do those fears still linger even though you're out of it yourself now?
To go back to the original question, I suppose I actually really enjoyed Waterford this year. I think Rennie leaving was just the final nail in the coffin for me. Like, I was hoping to stay on, and he was brilliant to work with, and I was actually really enjoying my football again. I was enjoying training, which I never really had. So when he kind of left, it kind of made my mind up. But like, with football, for me, at that, it's about enjoyment. It's about playing every week, and it's just about, like, no pressure. And then when you hit 27, 28, it becomes a job, it becomes your living, and you've got people literally shouting against you, and you're thinking, they're going to get me out of the job. How am I going to pay my bills? I firmly believe that managers may not say they do, but managers do listen to the crowd sometimes, and they just go, oh, they don't seem to like that individual, because the crowd will keep a manager on the job as well. Like, you know,
how tough is that actually, Graham? Like, because, you know, you've lads on a Friday night and they do what they do, but like, there's a lad there who's getting abused or he's getting slagging, and you're a person.
Yeah, no, I 100% like think that. I think it was a big factor in me, like wanting to finish up, because obviously being from Cork, I thought towards the end I was getting a bit of abuse. Not towards the end, even towards the end of my first spell before I left last summer, I was getting a bit of abuse, and I just thought to myself, this is like literally my family are up here. It was different. Like if you're in a different country, it's not your hometown club. Just my family, and I'm walking on the streets. I'm like, is this person going to abuse me and stuff? Like that was a good thing about playing in the UK. Like no one knew who you were or anything like that. I always was a firm believer in like, don't like live in the area where the club is, because you're just open for it and you walk down the street. And it's like anyone, like, I mean, John, I mean, someone comes into your office and is shouting abuse at you while you're trying to write like an article or something, you're not going to do it well, are you? And you, like, every bone in your body wants you to turn around to that person and just tell them where to go, but you can't do that either. Like, and even like I was saying, if you go on social media and you get a load of abuse and you say something back, you'll end up getting fined by the club, and you just think like, this is just ridiculous. Like, you know what I mean? I can't say boo to someone, but they can say every word to me. And it was just one of the factors for me that
I suppose what I can't get around as well, if Graham Combs is up front for Cork, you weren't the fastest lad in the world, right? But you actually worked hard, very good in the air, scored a lot of goals. If you were up front and you're playing like a prima donna and you're not putting your effort in, you're to me, you're sort of entitled to getting abuse. But if you're trying and it's not working out for you, I just think that's very dispiriting for the player, for the individual. And I think it's so wrong for a faceless guy on the terraces to do that to somebody who's actually trying and it's just not working out for him.
I 100% agree with you in terms of someone actually not trying or like pulling out of a challenge. Then I think like, well, we're actually paying a good wage. But like you said, sometimes if you're really trying hard, and you know the lads that are actually trying, you can tell. Like, I mean, you don't need to be knowledgeable of football to realise that this guy's actually trying. He's running around, look at him, like he can't even breathe because he's trying. And that did affect me. I always kind of prided myself on like, or at least I'll always give 100%. And I thought it got to the stage where people were even thinking I wasn't even running around the place. And I was like, it hasn't got to that. Like, I always run around. And especially sometimes as well, when you're a striker, you're the one player on the pitch, I think, that relies on everyone else in the team to play well, for you to play well. I mean, a centre-half could have a good game if everyone's doing terrible because the ball's in his air. If you're a striker and you're playing, like, say, I don't know, the best team in the league or away, like I've played in Dundalk in games, and the ball's just been lumped up to me, and I'm like, oh, I can't do anything. Like, I've been running around like a headless chicken without the ball, and then it just comes up to me, and no wonder I can't hold it. I'm out of breath, like, I've no energy, and you're fighting two centre-half muscle heads, and you just think, like, and then the crowd are just abusing you for, like, not holding up the ball, and you go, but, like, I'm getting zero service. You don't understand, like, I can't, what do you want me to do? Like, it's either that, or I just stand here, and I might be strong, but then the manager comes at you, so... It's just one of them things. Like, and I agree with you. Like, I do fully agree that if I look at someone and I say he's actually not even trying, that annoys me. Like, I've gone to games where I've gone like, he's winding me up no, because he's not even trying. But if someone's trying, you can actually generally see it. Then I think crowd should get behind them.
But you, like, you then go from Waterford to Cork, but then you've obviously made the decision to call it pretty quickly. Like, what drove that?
I was like, to be fair, I think, like, during lockdown, I think in my head, I'd retired. Like, you know, that kind of way, I thought the league isn't going back. Get yourself ready. You're not going to be playing next year if the league goes back next March. And then it was always in my mindset, when we were going back, I kind of got that buzz of, yeah, we're going back. This is great. And I went in training, and I just lost, like, any bit of love for it. I was just like... can't be here every day. I was just thinking to myself, I just want to go home. And it was nothing to do with the club or anything. It was just me. I was just done. I was just thinking to myself, I don't have to fight anymore for this. I literally was just like, I'm just having another season. I'm just playing for the sake of playing. And it was just going in training, going like, what am I going to do in a few weeks? That's always in my head. I think I was talking about this last week to someone. I said, with football, like, you're always on an up. And then you hit an age and you're always coming down. You're never going back up again. Like, and that's the way I was going. I was just going boom, 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 boom. And I was thinking to myself, I'll be 33 now. Do I really want to scrap for another club? again next year, you know, might come to that stage. And I just thought, like Cork are in a bad like way there, they need people fighting for them, and I'm not the guy for it. And I thought, like, don't hang around if that was the case. And I just thought, just go get a job and get security.
That's interesting. I mean, Gareth, like, you've had the experience now of, like, every player goes through this, you know, they come to the end eventually, and some, you know, see it coming, I guess, and some, you know, don't, you know, and they're hanging on. But you've now had the experience of working as an assistant manager, and you're also doing stuff in the academy at Rovers, which is obviously different age. But did you learn a lot more about the, like, mentality of players when you stepped out from being a player yourself and looking after number one to suddenly being an assistant and having to, you know, have a different role in a dressing room? And you probably encountered a lot of maybe players who felt what Graham is talking about there.
Yeah, we inherited that at Dundee. We inherited a group that sort of been at the club probably 3 or 4 years, and we were trying to maybe, you know, transition that. And that's hard because there's certain players that don't want to, you know, they want to hold on to the power that they have in that particular club. So we were trying to transition it to get maybe, you know, 23, 24, 25-year-olds into the team that would carry the team for 2 or 3 seasons. You know, we were lucky to, we got a good few right, we got some wrong in that sense, but we wanted to, like, we went from having the oldest squad in the league to having the youngest squad in the league within 6 months, like, you know. So with that comes a naivety as well. Or it was, yeah, there was a lot of lads transitioning. And you're dealing with that where they're not able to do what they used to do. And like I said, I could relate to it because I went through it. I agree with what Graham's, like, you know, in terms of myself, I was different. I went through that while he went to Shamrock Rovers, you know. I came back, it was my local club, I wanted to play there, I lived in my ma's. You're walking down the square and you get abuse, and I'm thinking, my whole game was built on trying, I just can't do what I used to be able to do. I'm sorry, but it's not through lack of effort.
How hard was that when it's kind of a thing that you're just getting older as well?
Yeah, it was just my, like, you know, I take a bit of blame myself, and in that, where I take the blame on myself was, I should have changed my game. I still wanted to play like Graham, the Graham Gartner that played at 23, where I wanted to follow people in and be aggressive and hit them and head teams and be the one, the centre-back that was on the front foot, where I should have played, maybe used my experience and dropped off and read the game better. I still wanted to be dominant, Graham, in terms of just getting to the ball and things. Where, so I take a little bit of blame on that myself, where I should have realised it, but it is like, and I then start getting back injuries, which I lost a yard, and to be honest, I couldn't afford to lose a yard. I wasn't quick enough as I was, so that yard affected me. But it's hard because when you see it with other, it's like a boxer, isn't it? Sometimes you're the last to know, you know, and you're still thinking you can do it. So yeah, I think I have a lot of sympathy for players going through it. I have a lot of sympathy for players who go through it like that. Have given everything because they wanted to be a footballer, but, you know, maybe you've turned down opportunities of a steady job at 20. I turned down the apprenticeship at 20. I turned down other jobs at 26 because I still wanted to be a full-time footballer. And then when you retire at 31, you're thinking, what have I got now? But, you know, you chased your ambition and you lived your dream, but then you go, you sit back and you go, well, what am I going to do now? So I have a lot of sympathy for them people. Because
what does your life entail now?
So, Jordan, I work for a company called Mercury Security Distribution. So I just started that in the last month. I was going to go back into full-time football. I decided just to leave it. So I do that during the day and then I coach in the evenings. Like, I just go up and coach up in the academies. And I'm just trying to do as much as I can to keep busy. Like, I just like, I hate having down days, you know. So I work that during the day, and then I'm on the phone and even trying to do a bit more media stuff just to do things, you know. I just like being active and I just like talking football, like, you know, I just love it. I look like, see, I haven't spoke to Graham in ages. I met Graham when we played against them at Dundee, and then I was home for the cup final and I was talking to him then last year after the cup final.
You do a mean impression of his accent,
like,
now.
It's just No, my Cork accent's not bad, is it? but you know what? Like, and you try and help them, but you know they're coming to the end, and they're trying. And the thing is, with players that are coming to the end and they're looking at coaching, they're actually can be very opinionated on what you need to be doing. You know what I mean? They're the ones that will go, "What are we doing this session for? And why are we doing this? And you know, this isn't great, or this." And, you know, and you're looking at them thinking, "You're going to be a coach soon. And you're going to have someone picking holes in your session, so like relax, like, you know."
So, to Graham Cummins, like, what's your life plan now? Then, like, you are thinking about the media stuff, like, this is on your agenda, but you're also doing a few other things. Or what's your focus?
I want to do a bit more media stuff. I think I can be a bit more opinionated now than I had been in the past. Obviously, I don't think you can just jump straight into that. Like, there's no I've gone for uncertainty for the last few years. So my plan was just get a full-time job, which I did. Handed in my notice this week.
Oh, go on.
It's just literally, do you know what? Like, when you're working a job all the time in football, I thought, like, doing 9 to 5 sitting in front of a desk would be something I could actually enjoy, but it wasn't. So, I thought, like, some people might say what a waste of time that was, but I kind of look at it as a positive, because I thought to myself, you know, it's something I don't want to do now.
Absolutely. It might take
lads a few years. And I just met a fella a few weeks ago, speaking to him, and he said, "Do you ever fancy doing like insurance and stuff?" I met his boss last week, and that's why I handed him my notice. I wasn't stupid enough to walk away from a job, but I met this guy last week, and he offered me an entrepreneur course with Acorn Insurance to be qualified financial advisor. So I'll be starting work with them in a few weeks, and then do the journalism on the side. But like, speaking to them is more of my alley, of going out, meeting people, talking to people, not just been clocking in the hours and getting it done, like a bit more flexibility. And that's kind of the life I was used to. And you get to walk around your own kind of hours as well, just like they pop in, which they seem to be very flexible. And it was just something I thought I'd get on with really well. And it definitely suited me more. So that would be me, you know, and I'm really happy about that. Like, that's the way I am. I mean, you've got a family to support and a house, mortgages to pay, football, it gets pressure because you know time's running out where you want a job there that you know you can do for the rest of your life.
Well, before we let you go, lads, just a couple of, I suppose, current affairs thing that you can both help us on, I guess, with your first-hand knowledge. Graham Cummins, can Cork stay up? What's the challenge they face?
It's the million-dollar question. I think I kind of addressed it in one of my recent columns. Like, against Rovers, I watched them, and again, like John said, like, you can criticize teams, but just the lack of effort. Like I said, I don't want to criticize lads or show them, but I just thought like they gave up so easy against Rovers. And I know, speaking to a couple of the Rovers lads after, they thought like Harps will stay up because they said there's a lot more fight in Harps, and it's basically between them two who goes automatically down. Like, even at that, like I said straight away at that game, I thought this is set up for John Caulfield coming back. And if you're betting man like John Caulfield coming back against Cork, like, I'd be betting on John Caulfield at this time, the way Galway are going.
Jesus, I tell you, if you got abuse from Cork fans before now, you're going to get some. Caulfield is going to relegate Cork, yeah.
Look, I think they might come out, like, the game against Harps this weekend is massive. I think, like, the winner of that, or whoever, Cork can't lose. They can go up there and get a point, but they can't afford to lose that game, because I think, obviously, Ballybuffet, there's nothing nice about going up there. There's not a nice pitch. The weather's meant to be awful again. Like, so that will show. I think if Cork go up and get something there, it does show that there's a lot of fight in the lads.
Do you think they'd ever be set up to go and get a draw? Like, would they ever? Because I know the way Neil wants to play. Like,
no,
you know what I mean? You know what I mean by that? Like, would he be pragmatic enough to go, "Well, do you know what? Let's not get B here," because I know he wants to. And I know from talking to the Rovers lads, that some of the first team boys was like, you know, a lot of two of their goals came off back basically transitions. Mm-hmm. He won the ball back in Cork, in Cork's like area, and then went and scored like Cork's first third of the game. So, like, would he go and say, listen, we're not going to play out as much, we're going to be a bit more pragmatic? Would Neil do something like that? You know what I mean? From the Neil I know, you want to play a lot, like, you know?
Yeah, like, I've only wrote about this. I think, like, in fairness to Neil, he does try and play football the right way. And
yeah,
he's trying, like, I think he's set up for a whole season, and the way the things have worked out, like, he's still trying to play football, and credit to him. But I think the way Cork are now, like you said, they're like, they seem to be kind of costing themselves by trying to play out for the back. And there's so little games left. This league, yeah, right, if you work hard, you defend well, you'll score from a set piece or something like that, and you'll get out of trouble. I don't think you can actually play your way, yeah, out of trouble, as people would say. I think the guy Simpson is a handful. Against Rovers, things went up to him, and like, even though he wasn't winning things, I don't think like Lopez or Grace were winning headers off him. And I thought, like,
they have Kit Elliott back now as well.
Sorry,
they have Kit Elliott back as well now.
Yeah, like, I think he'd help, but I think get someone quick up there next to Simpson against Harps and just causing problems. Like, that's like, I think trying to go up the Valley of Clay and try to play football, you've no idea what the pitch is. And it's a risk. It's a risky game. And I've never gone up to Bally Buffet and come away from the game going, God, we played well there today. We played, every time I've gone up there, it's like, that was disgusting. We've got to win. Let's just get out of here. That's exactly what Cork needs to do. That's what I would be telling the players this week if I was in that dressing.
Do you think they're able? That's what my question was. I'm sorry, you're probably asked doing the last job here, but that's what I'm thinking. Are you able to do
doing a better job?
Cork able to do that?
Are they able to play
like pragmatically, like, you know?
But is that like, yeah, but I would put that down to someone's ego. Everyone in the world, the hardest thing is to play beautiful football. It's easy to play horrible football. So that's ego then, like, you know what I mean? If the players don't want to do it, then that's their ego, as I would point at. So I think every single player, if you're a professional footballer, you're able to stand there and kick a ball 40 yards. So it's up to their egos then if they say, I believe in this, it'll get us out of trouble, which I think is the way to go forward. Because I think every, like, I know, like, in sometimes with John, like, people might give up to him, but what Caulfield does, what's brilliant is he's efficient and he's all about the result. And that's a good thing sometimes. I mean, he won a lot of trophies with Cork, and like, people sometimes, he got a lot of criticism. Looking back and I know, I think Cork would like do anything to be in that position of playing ugly football and winning trophies all the time.
Yeah. So Gareth, I mean, just before I let you go, I mean, your old mate Stephen Bradley, I know you are involved at Rovers, so you know you have a very good idea what's going on there. But I suppose if you take yourself out of your involvement and just look at it sort of from a neutral perspective, I mean, they do look like they are going to win the league. They look in a very strong position to win the league. Like, you know, I guess you're pretty happy for him that he's managed to get it working there. But like, have you, even from afar, have you how have they got to this point? Like, you know, you and Graham, of course, has been there too, so he can talk about it a bit as well, maybe. But like, you know, the pressure he was under, like, he could have got, you know, Stephen could have been sacked a couple of years ago, or certainly if you'd given the fans a referendum at that stage, I think a lot of them would have voted for him to go. You know, after that game, I think, was it Dundalk, where they lost 5-2 or something. And yet now here they stand on the verge of winning the league and you know, playing well against Milan. Like, how has he done it? And how good are they?
I think they're excellent. I think what he's done is he's made sure that the majority of the group buy into what the club are doing. So it means something to play for the club. I think he brought that back to the club. The people that deserve credit are Steve McPhail deserves credit. Like, Jonathan Rhodes deserves credit as well for probably sticking with him through that and trusting the process. He had a process which he stuck to, and it's worked. I think Cork have obviously helped in that. They haven't been able to sustain whatever they wanted. They were building under John, whatever financial reasons they haven't been able to. Last year, Dundalk were excellent, but I think they've self-imploded. But Stephen can only look after Shamrock Rovers, and he's made them a force. Like, So he was challenging Dundalk last year in any way. So he's made them a force that's ridiculously consistent now. They're strong. They've pace at the back. And they've such creativity in the midfield areas. I know Aaron Green might get a bit stiff for not scoring enough goals, but they're set up to score goals behind it. It's the second line, you know, it's Jack Bourne, it's Graham Bourke, it's obviously Danny Lafferty popped in with a few goals before he got injured. So how he's done it is that it's been a gradual building process, which means that it should last, you know. If you have a quick fix, it tends to go quickly. So what I think what they've done is they built it gradually, which then you're hoping will have a sustained success for the next 3 or 4 seasons. And I genuinely think for the next 3 or 4 years, I do think they'll dominate it. You know, I can't see anybody, especially with the COVID stuff, ever building something that they can go and challenge them again. I don't know what's going on at Dundalk. Obviously, I know Vinny as well. I played with Vinny. I don't know what's going on that a manager who nearly won the treble loses his job. You know what I mean? Where they were still in a chance of doing things. So they've obviously imploded. I can't see them building something in the next 2 or 3 seasons that's going to challenge Shamrock Rovers. I can't see any club doing it. Our infrastructure is there. We're our second team as well. So I think the whole club deserves credit for sticking with a plan, like, and not basically panicking when everybody else did. And as coming from somebody who went into a job that we were given a plan and this is what we're doing and the chairman panics, like, I appreciate that, you know. Obviously, Stephen deserved massive credit for steering them through that and sticking to his principles and sticking to what he wants to do. And I admire that in him. And I think the whole club deserves credit. So Stephen Bradley will always talk about his group, and he says the group is this and the group is that. And he's right, they are together. And I think the bigger group around them is together as well, like, you know, and that's the most important thing. There's no chinks in it, you know. Nobody can get at Rovers, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, listen, lads, I have to say it's been great to have you both on, and we'd love to have you both on again, because there's a lot of stuff we wanted to discuss, and I'm sure we'll get back to it at another day. But yeah, it's been great to have you with us, Graham and Graham, and maybe we'll hear more about the sugar puffs and other trial stories in future. But
tell them the one, Graham, when you thought you recognised the famous person in our dressing room. Do you remember that?
Oh, go on. Does Graham remember this?
Remember that. Who's the old Neil McCann?
So someone needs to tell this. Someone needs to tell this.
Graham will tell it in his Cork accent, because no one understood it at the time. Nobody in the dressing room understood what he said, and I just looked at him like a... Go on.
Is it Neil McCann? When I walked in, I was like, that's great, pretty famous over there, is it? Is it him?
We were calling him Terry, weren't we? We were like, all right, Terry.
Oh, that was it.
And he turned around, he says to me, that fella Terry over there, he says, he's the bop off Neil McCann, boy. It was the thickest Cork accent ever. Fuck off Neil McCann, that boy. And I went, that is Neil McCann. And he turns to Kenny Brown and he went, I told you what. Like that. And Neil just didn't understand the word he was saying. He was just looking at me. And he's looking at me going, is he having a pop at me? I went, no. Like, you know. Every time, because I tell Neil, I still talk to him, like, and even he does be like, every time he says somebody looks like someone, he says he's the bop off him.
Graham Covens, the legacy lives on. Cheers,
thanks,
lads.
Pleasure, lads. Thanks a lot. Good to see
thanks
you.
Thanks a million, lads.
Don't forget to visit lottoland.ie/sportsbook, where you'll find all the odds and weekly special bets for the SSC or Tristy Premier Division. This week, Lottoland is boosting a Premier Division home treble of Bowes to beat Derry, Pats to beat Shells, and Finn Harps to beat Cork. Currently 8.35, boosted to 9.5, a 72. Visit lottoland.ie/sportsbook. Yeah, got to credit Dan for putting those two lads together.
Graham, the two Grahams.
It's always kind of fascinating to go down memory lane, but I think you get kind of just an insight into the life of a footballer and the life of a fella who was a footballer, and just the challenges, even from Gartz there, in terms of not having down days and just keeping, you know, that motivation. I just found it very interesting, Dan. You know, the in fairness, you got Graham Cummins come on the show, but it's not a very real stuff there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you could have done an hour even with either of them, if you know what I mean. And then, like, every footballer has a story. And I suppose, you know, putting those two together was probably an element of, you know, the crossover of their experiences and Scotland and Ireland. But it's interesting that they both had their struggles as well towards the end with their, maybe their body not being able to do what they wanted, or, you know, just various reasons they struggled with maybe the aging process and not being as good as they were, or not being as good as people think they should be. And I think, you know, a lot of footballers would probably relate to that in some shape or form. But sometimes, I guess, being able to articulate that is half the battle, to actually be aware of it. I think some people reach their awareness maybe later or not at all. And I suspect we'll be hearing probably a lot from both of them and, you know, in the coming years. But listen, we've got through a full hour without talking about Galway, really. There was a John Caulfield reference, but Galway on the charge.
On the charge. To be fair, obviously, we don't really have time tonight to discuss what happened in Tala. The League of Ireland games at the weekend were significant in their own right, but I suppose it was Tala where, you know, the chat was. It was a remarkable night and so on. We'll talk about it again. But yeah, like, we obviously had Caulfield on recently, but I suppose through convenience, I was at the Cabin Teely game, and just the Drogheda game last night as well, Dan. You know, Brandon Kavanagh scoring twice and then Mark Doyle getting a hat-trick for Drogheda. There's an awful lot going on in the first division, but the Cabin Teely game was just nuts. Galway would go down to 10 men, a game with, you know, lots of chances, but, you know, you're thinking they're going to hold on for a draw here. But I just got this feeling from them that Caulfield doesn't believe this is lost. So he brings on young Wilson up front for a bit of pace with 10 men, takes off in the current, very brave move, but Wilson has pace and he's figuring Cabin Teely will be stretched a bit. Wilson Mueru wins a free kick from which Christopher basically puts the ball into the back of the net, top corner, with this kind of free goal last minute. Place goes bananas and John Caulfield strikes again, and it's just unbelievable. And they're playing very entertaining football. After the game, I spoke to the captain, Shane Duggan, and this was literally 3 or 4 minutes after the game. See, could he get his head around it?
Sir, with Galway United skipper Shane Duggan, that was a mad game.
Unbelievable. The effort the boys put in from the start all the way to the end. We were down 10 men, kept fighting, plugging away, and we got the rewards at the end. I felt we had some very good chances in the game, especially in the first half. The keeper pulled off one or two top-notch saves, but credit to the boys, they kept digging in and got the 3 points.
You've been around the game a long time. What difference has John Caulfield made? Because that's two really late winners now, and obviously you're on a roll.
Yeah, look, we all know John from the league, his teams always fight to the end and really difficult to beat. And I think that's the main thing, is keeping clean sheets, because we have a lot of pace in the team, and he knows, he gives the boys license to get forward with the pace, and it's up to everyone at the back, and keeping clean sheets is the key. And because we know we'll create chances in this league especially, and it's showing now, that's two clean sheets in a row, so hopefully we keep it going.
Well, the changes he made as well, bringing on Wilson, obviously made a big difference.
Definitely, yeah. Look, his pace is frightening, you know, and you've seen at the end, he won the free down the line, and one or two breakaways as well, he was causing havoc. So he had that tread, especially on this pitch, it's huge, you know, and their defenders aren't the quickest, so he done really well when he came on.
What's it like just coming off the pitch after a win like that? You've done it already against, obviously, Shamrock Rovers B, and tonight was very, very unlikely for most of that game.
It's massive, you know, because, as I said, we're on a bit of a run now, you know, that's our fifth game in a row, and we're building momentum, and that's what we want. It's a feeling you're going to the pitch every game, you're thinking you're going to win the game, and credit to the boys, and even with John, he said keep going to the end, and these boys do, you know, and their fitness levels are showing as well. They look really strong at the end, even when we were down 10 men.
What's the standard like for you in the first division back this year? Some good players there?
Yeah, definitely. Look, there's a lot of young players coming through as well, and it's good for them. There's always four or five teams in the first division who have a lot of good players, you know, and every game is a bit of a battle, so you have to be up for it every week. As you've seen Wexford last week, they're down the bottom half of the table, but if you're not up for a battle, they'll make things harder for yourself. And last week against Wexford, we weren't great, but we came through that as well, so that's a good sign when you're not probably performing at your best, but you come away with the win.
Time is running out, but where can you finish if you keep going?
Listen, it's just up to ourselves. You just take every game as it comes, and we're not really looking at any teams around us. We're just focusing every game, picking up the 3 points. And I think if we do that, we'd be well up there.
Talented scene, this Galway team as well, and talented young lads coming through.
Yeah, definitely. Look, yeah, Galway underage always have good young lads, and it's about getting them onto the pitch and getting game time. And I think John will spot that as well with the young lads there. There's a lot of talent there, and even the under-19s coming through. We played them a few times in 11-a-side friendlies, and some fantastic players there. So hopefully next couple of years, future's bright.
There seems to be a real self-belief, and just you're enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's, when you're winning games, you have that winning feeling. As I said to you a while ago, that you're going onto the pitch and you feel you're not going to lose, you know, and you're going to win those games. And even that's twice now we score goals in the last minute of the game for winners, you know. Other times you might be conceding there, but you see the boys defending as well at the back, unbelievable stuff, throwing their head, throwing their bodies at everything, and hopefully we keep that going.
Just finally, what's it like to be playing behind closed doors for so long? Are you nearly getting used to it at this stage?
Do you know what, you are kind of getting used to it, but hopefully now for the last few games, if a few more supporters can get in, you know, because it's a shame for them really. And as Galway is, have a great, fantastic fan base, and if we're in around that playoff spot, you know they'd come out in force. But look, if we can start building a few more fans coming in every week, that's all we can do, and hopefully we can.
You always ask another question after I say finally. But what did John Caulfield say to you there afterwards?
He was just delighted the way we kept going defending. He always just wants honesty from us, and once you give 100% and leave it all on the pitch, that's all he asked for, you know. And he was just delighted the way we were defending, keeping clean sheets and nicking it at the end. That's what it's all about.
Early on, we gave out Lotto Land Premier Division price booster. This week, they're also offering a second price booster in Europe. Back them can target to win the Europa League qualifier away to Sheriff. Currently 4.5, boosted to 9-2. And that is the best in the market. And as Dan says, if they perform, they have a massive chance.
So, Johnny, who was more excited, Shane Duggan or you?
It was... In fairness, Dan, like, to win a game that we're...
Oh, no, we don't need the match report again. Like, who was more...
No, like, probably Pat Dolan, actually. He was at the game. He's been at more Galway games than I have, and he was very excited.
The deal maker.
To be fair, Dan, they were under the cosh that much. It looked a million to one that this could happen, and the place went bananas, and Cavan Teely players were absolutely sick after the game. This was a massive blow for their chance. I think they've lost 4 out of 5 now, so they've derailed a bit. And just the Caulfield effect, the players are absolutely buzzing, and they believe in what he's doing. This, you know, got into a very drunken conversation one of them the other night about the Caulfield effect, and he said it's man mandarin with him. He just makes.
I hope he wasn't drunk.
I do as well. I do as well. But yeah, it's just, it's great. And
giving away too much there. That player's just done.
It's sad that, you know, the season's nearly over, but it's going to be dramatic. And it was amazing stuff. And Bray are playing Drogheda now on Friday night. Lots of big games coming up, obviously.
Yeah, but it's funny, you started off the show by talking about Rovers Milan. To me, like, Rovers Milan is gone. It's over. It's in the past. Rovers have played Waterford since. Rovers are on the way to winning the league.
Well, Dan, that game, by the way, the Waterford game. So I remember I did text the group and I said, Waterford are doing really well here. This was 5 minutes before the start of the Cavan Teely game. So I'm watching the game in the bar, which is now a press room, whatever it is. Next thing I look at it and it's 4-0 to Rovers. It's just like Waterford were actually well in this game, doing well. Next thing, they're 4-0.
Yeah, there was almost like last year's title race for you, really. I feel bad, but you did bring it up. You did literally put it into the group Waterford doing really well here. And before even people had seen it, the Rovers had scored 3 goals. It was sort of But I mean, what you're talking about Rovers, Milan, like, people don't realise like how big this game could be in Tirrasfal tomorrow. Like, the fact that the winners of the Dock game, you know, are at home to a team from Georgia or the Faroes next Thursday. So if anything, for Rovers and for everyone, it just shows that the champions' route is where it's at. If the champions are, you know, if you're in the Europa League, you can play AC Milan, and with all due respect, you're pretty much done. And they would have had to play 2 more tough games after that. Dundalk have had, you know, they haven't had a good European campaign yet. Here they are in a situation where, and as Filippo Giovagnoli said today, he thinks if they play to their best, they'll qualify for the group stages.
Do you have any faith that they can do that?
Yeah, I do. You know, I do.
Do you think they believe in the manager?
I know you don't.
I'm not saying that. I just don't know what to expect from them. I don't know what to expect from them.
as a result, you're not like enthused by the game, and you're talking about
I think this is a game I'd love to go to. I just don't know what to expect from a team that's kind of half been thrown together under an obscure new management and has had a turbulent campaign.
Yeah, I get, but listen, all I can say is that like they're definitely playing with a new renewed vigor and with a purpose, and whether that purpose is good enough, I think like they're actually, you know, I think before they were probably too conservative in Europe, and I think now they're probably going to be the other side. They're going to be open and they're going to leave chances, and they need to be defensively better. Listen, if they're not defensively better, they'll get wiped.
They're in Stoke, yeah.
But they're definitely showing more attacking thought, I think, you know, or certainly, you know, that they're trying, like, the positions that Duffy and Kolovic were taking up against Shells, and even Sean Murray played quite well in Andorra. There's definitely a couple of players that have got a bit of sparkle back. And I think, listen, part of that, I think, you know, Vinnie Perrott, people would say that Kolovic was always going to take time to settle. You know, some players were injured, and you can't just link it all to new management. That's not fair. But there is no doubt that for whatever reason, just, you know, things have been freshened up a bit. And I think they've got a chance purely because Sheriff are not as good as they used to be. Sheriff 3 years ago, and then Dundalk in the current form, no chance. I just think, you know, Sheriff are, listen, they have a cosmopolitan squad, all different nationalities, new players. Like their main striker's gone. They're bringing a guy from Panathinaikos on loan. They've, you know, they've a Brazilian left full who I think is apparently their second best attacking threat. I think I mentioned that earlier on. Like they're decent, but I'm just saying, like the route that Dundalk have, if they like, I think basically, if they did return to their best form in a 90-minute game behind closed doors, I'd give them a chance. Whether it's good enough, we'll see. But it's funny, it could change the whole complexion of the club season here if they do something. So that's looming. Listen, if they lose, you know, they're playing Rovers on Sunday, you know, Rovers will fancy themselves, and the Dock are pretty much back in crisis next week, really. Mm. You know, so they just have a brief window of hope to get something from their season. But
yeah,
we've got the Dock Rovers on Sunday.
That is 7:30 on Sunday.
Yeah, we have Finn Harps and Cork this weekend. We have the first division, as you mentioned. There's lots to discuss. I guess, you know, we'll get back to it in probably more detail next week, the pulling it apart. But we are sort of getting to the stage, which is good, where pretty much every game means something. And actually, ironically enough, it's nearly the title race in the Premier that has the potential to be wrapped up before everything else. So maybe like the neutral perspective is to want Rovers to drop some points to give us something. But otherwise, you know, we're still going to have a run in for those European places. You know, Pats haven't scored in ages. There's a lot to discuss, but we'll get back to it next week.
Yeah, there is so much going on, and there were obviously interesting games. The Pats Derry game was fascinating. Bowes kept the job done. Lukey Byrne getting a very harsh sending off. Fan of the show, friend of the show. Very unfortunate that Harps game, but it's going to be a very interesting week. Best of luck to Dundalk. Have to say, if ever there was an away trip for me, this is like this obscure previous current Soviet enclave, and Moldova genuinely looks like one of the greatest shitholes in the world, yet this place is still pro-Russian, and as you mentioned so eloquently, it's part of this kind of border, almost like bandit region. I've watched a few videos on it in my day, and I would absolutely love to be there. We're not there anyway, we are here.
But yeah, you got the cabo instead. Anyway, right.
Let's go.
The
cabo. And the bar was a media center.
Let's go.
Right, thanks again to our sponsors, Lotto Land, where you can dream big for your Euro Millions and Irish Lotto betting. We'll also check out the top SC or Tricity League and European qualifier markets at lottoland.ie/sportsbook. And thanks a million for the two Grahams for coming in, and thanks to Dan, and see you next week.
But there are limits to your life.